Is Gisele Bündchen to blame for Desmond Ridder not seeing the field? We're answering that question among others and breaking down Marcus Mariota's film from week 12 on today's Locked On Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP. Of course, I'm known as Sirius Black on these streets. I'm known as Mr. Drew. I'm also the illustrious host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, your team every day. And we thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. Of course, it's free and available Monday through Friday on a variety of podcast platforms and on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube and you will get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So today's episode is an all 22 review and Q&A where I'll be answering your listener questions and we'll get into how Tom Brady's ex is ruining Desmond Ritter's career and the development. We'll get on that into that later. But to sort of set up that conversation, we have to talk about Marcus Mariota and his performance in week 12. And this stems from a listener question. These all 22 reviews are also Q&As and mailbags, whatever you want to call them, where you guys can submit questions. And of course, this comes from Connor R., who submitted his question via email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And he says, for the all 22 review, I was wondering if you thought Mariota actually played poorly or if it was just a good old school football game that was decided by a great defensive play. Also, with the Bucs keeping the division lead close, does that ruin our chances of seeing Ritter after the bye week? So, yeah, I do think it was a great defensive play by Washington in this game to sort of prevent that touchdown. It would have been a touchdown, in my opinion, had Daron Payne not tipped that ball. Cordarrelle Patterson would have caught it in the flat and, you know, would have trucked whoever he needed to truck to get in the end zone because he's CP and all that sort of stuff. So, potentially then the Falcons probably would have given up a field goal in the final a minute of that game, but we'll sit here and pretend that we would have gotten a defensive stop and instead of Richie Grant or D. Alford, whose turn would it have been? Isaiah Oliver would have got the game sealing interception or something like that. But talking about Marcus Mariota, I do think Marcus Mariota played fine, but that's all. We're always grading Marcus Mariota on a curve, right? We don't judge him by the standards that, or at least I don't judge him by the standards that I would judge a top 15 quarterback in this league. We judge him on the standards of basically being a bottom 10-ish quarterback that is functional starter that's not going to necessarily ruin your chances of winning each and every week. From my perspective, despite my frequent criticism on this pod, I feel like he's performed at that level as a functional starter for pretty much most of the season outside of one or two games. Now, in this Washington game, I don't think his accuracy was great. Now, we know in general his accuracy has never been great this season, but I think you can make an argument that probably the wet conditions probably worsened his accuracy in this game. I do give Mariota some credit that I think his mobility and athleticism were pretty good in this game, on display in this game. I think he was very effective on 5 of the 6 read option plays that he ran. Obviously, he got stopped on the final one that then set up that defensive play from Daron Payne. There were also a couple of times where I thought he did a good job navigating a sort of muddy pocket, avoiding pressure and finding windows to throw into. We'll talk about one specific play where he was able to do that. If I was going to complain about anything that Mariota did in this game, mainly I would focus on a couple of plays in the third quarter on that drive where the Falcons settled for the field goal from Younghoe Koo, where I felt like Mariota could have made a couple of throws that could have extended that drive and put them in a position to score a touchdown. And then the sack he took in the fourth quarter on a 3-and-out that really kind of ruined that drive. So in the third quarter, there was a 1st-and-10 on that specific drive that we're talking about, where he was hit as he was thrown by Jonathan Allen. And to me, that was a play where he had the potential to pull the trigger earlier on that play to Drake London, who was over the middle on a dig route. He didn't pull the trigger. There were two underneath defenders sort of between him and Drake London. And I understand why Mariota was a little hesitant to pull the trigger on those throws, because he would have had to either try to split those defenders or throw it over those defenders. And that wouldn't have been an easy throw. So I understand his hesitance, but you want your quarterback, a quote unquote top 15 quarterback, potentially hits his back foot on that play action pass, and that ball comes out, you know, with anticipation, hitting Drake London in stride, and that turns into it like a 10 or 15 yard gain. And we haven't really seen great anticipation from Mariota this season. It's one of the reasons why a couple of weeks ago in that Carolina game, we made a point of emphasis to highlight, you know, a couple of anticipatory throws that he made in that game that were sort of different from what he has been throughout the season. So, you know, more nitpicky on that particular play. You know, it specifically worked out for the Falcons, because the very next snap they ran the ball to Cordero Patterson. He ripped off a 21-yard run. It was thanks to great blocking from Parker Hesse and Jake Matthews and Drew Dolman and Keith Smith, all sort of hitting their blocks in space on that particular play. So any yards that were left on the field by Mariota not pulling trigger, they were able to get back in the ground game. And that has been sort of the through line throughout this season. When the ground game is working for the Falcons, their offense is functioning more so than it's really a byproduct of their passing game. Then the next two pass plays on that drive, I did think the next time, it was two plays later, right? And this is when Mariota did a good job avoiding pressure, moving in the pocket, sidestepping Deron Payne's pressure, and then he kind of ripped a throw on the move to Alamide Zaccheaus. And this was the play that you guys may recall where Alamide Zaccheaus dove for near the sideline and didn't catch it. It hit him in his hands, so you can certainly say that Zaccheaus should have caught it, but I also think because that throw wasn't necessarily a pinpoint accurate throw, you know, I think Mariota kind of made it a little bit harder. Like, that shouldn't have been a play that Zaccheaus had to lay out for, so to speak. And the reason why that throw wasn't pinpoint accurate is because he's kind of throwing off balance, right? You know, he's moving, you know, to his right and kind of throwing on the move. And if that was Patrick Mahomes, you know, we would expect Patrick Mahomes to hit that throw every single time. And that's why Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. It's not fair to judge Marcus Mariota by that standard. He's not that guy. He's never going to be that guy. So again, you know, that particular play, while not ideal, it feels a little nitpicky. It's a little forgivable that Mariota didn't hit that throw. And he did give Zaccheaus an opportunity to catch that football. And so therefore Zaccheaus should have come down it. Then the very next play, I do think you have to be critical of Mariota on this situation. It's a 3rd and 6. Zaccheaus settles over the middle. He throws a laser high in behind him, right? And that's a play where Mariota's kind of climbing the pocket. He doesn't necessarily reset his feet. And so I think that leads to the inaccurate throw on his part. And, you know, that should be a throw that's right on the numbers to Zaccheaus so he can catches it in traffic. Or that's a throw that should be low and in front of him rather than high and behind him, right? And, you know, then you get to that 4th quarter play where he's sacked by Montez Sweat. You know, you could probably categorize that as a coverage sack, although there was a potential window for him to throw the ball to Zaccheaus. But I think he got a little flustered in the pocket, sees a flash of color in his face, then tries to sort of extend the play outside the pocket. He could have just kind of, it's a second down, by the way. He could have just kind of, a second and two, at 2nd and 12, I think. He could have just kind of tucked it, ran up the middle. There was a run lane up the middle when he decided to tuck it and run it, where he could have just gotten, you know, 5-6 yards and put the team in a 3rd and manageable situation. But instead of doing that, he tries to sort of break back outside the pocket because there's a flash of the Washington defenders. It's Casey Tuhill in that instance. And he tries to then run back to the outside. And Tuhill's kind of perfectly positioned to, you know, keep him contained in the pocket. And so he holds on to the ball and then kind of runs around. And by that time, you know, Montez Sweat has already disengaged from Caleb McGarry and chases him down and gets a sack. And that puts the Falcons in, you know, they lose 9 yards. It's a 3rd and 21, which is basically in this offense, a 3rd and impossible. And so those are kind of the plays where I feel like Mariota could have done better. There's more to talk about on those specific plays, and we'll talk a little bit more about how that applies to the Falcons' playoff chances as we continue today's episode. But we'll, I'll put those plays up on Twitter. I'll link to them in the description below so you can sort of judge for yourself what I'm thinking on those plays. If you agree or disagree on that, and leave a comment to let me know if you disagree or agree. But we will have more to say about Marcus Mariota. We'll answer the second part of your question, Connor, talking about whether the Bucs sucking is the number one reason why Desmond Ridder isn't playing currently. And we all know that the Bucs are sucking because of Gisele Bündchen. And we'll get into that as we continue today's episode, guys. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Turo, which is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want, from a community of local hosts. You can browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the US, Canada, and now in Australia. You can book a spacious SUV or minivan for that family road trip. You can get a classic or luxury car for that special event or holiday. You can find an affordable economy car that if you're on a budget and you just kind of need to get from A to B, or you can drive that luxurious electric vehicle that you've had your eye on. Many Turo hosts can deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Ditch the boring rental cars and find your drive at Turo.com. That's Turo.com. And this episode is also brought to you by Audible. Audible is releasing a new slate of football podcasts that we're sure you're going to love. You can check out the Block Forever podcast, a brand new podcast from former NFL All-Pro Ryan Khalil and Audible. I remember Ryan Khalil when he was playing for the Carolina Panthers and nailing Curtis Lofton on those second level blocks back in the day. And now he's taking the football conversation to the second level, to that next level. You can get the inside scoop into the game through the eyes of some of the greats. Ryan's going to sit down with former players, former coaches, all pros across the league to get the real scoop on what happens on the field and behind the scenes inside the locker room during the team meetings and even back at the hotel. New episodes of Block Forever will be released every week ahead of the Thursday night football game. It's available for free on Audible or wherever you get your podcasts. Audible, get in the game. So, guys, I want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. And, of course, for your second listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. Go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with the local experts that only Locked On can provide by subscribing to Locked On Sports Today on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. So continuing the conversation about Mariota's performance in this game, right? Looking at those four plays, you know, a lot of other people would look at those four plays and say, oh, this is why Mariota deserves to be benched. But like, I look at those four plays where, you know, we're critical of Mariota, and I feel like that sort of assessment is being very disingenuous. I think the first two plays that we talked about, while myself and being critical of him, you know, I don't think it's quite fair to really expect him to make those plays consistently, given going back to the point earlier where we talked about him not being that sort of top 15 quarterback. I would expect the top 15 quarterback to make those throws. The last two, though, I do think is him not making those plays is why he's a quote unquote bottom 10 quarterback, right? And, you know, when it comes to Desmond Ridder, it's not because I think, oh man, Desmond Ridder, if you put him in the game, he's making all of those plays. No, he's probably not making all of those plays, right? But I do think we're on a timetable where there's no timetable where Marcus Mariota is making any of those plays, right? You know, as many will point out, he is what he is at this point in time in his NFL career. But I do feel like with development, right, that's the key, that at some point, whether it's 2022, 2023, or 2024, maybe, and again, it's a maybe, but I'm hopeful and optimistic that Desmond Ridder could be more of that top 15 caliber quarterback that could be making those throws, could be making those plays more often than not, right? And, you know, I think that's a guy, and when I'm talking about top 15 quarterback, that's a guy that I think is legitimately going to keep you in playoff contention every year. Now, of course, everybody's sitting here going like, well, the Falcons are currently in playoff contention, Aaron. Isn't that good enough for Marcus Mariota? Well, it's like the Falcons aren't really a playoff team, right? You know, they're only a playoff team because basically the NFC is terrible, and especially the NFC South is terrible, right? You look at Football Outsiders DVOA rankings, right? The Falcons are 20th overall in their DVOA rankings. They're 13th on offense, primarily due to, you know, I think a top 8 rushing attack, and they're 30th on defense, right? Now, typically, there is a team like that every year. I think Baltimore was kind of similar team, like 19th in DVOA, high level offense, low level defense. They were like an 8-win team last year. The Raiders the year prior were a very similar team, sort of top 10 offense, bottom 5 defense. And again, were like an 8-8 team the previous year. And so like, that's kind of where the Falcons are. They're a team that would probably be a 7 or 8 win team almost any single year. And that's probably not a team that's making the playoffs in most years. Maybe they can push for a wild card spot, but you know, they're probably going to be on the outside looking in most years. And Lord knows you don't expect that type of team to actually win their division. And that's kind of where the Falcons are in a potential position where they are potentially going to win their division, right? And now you look at those Football Outsiders DVOA rankings, you look at the top 14 teams, the teams that are quote unquote the 14 best teams that should be the sort of best playoff worthy teams. Only 5 of those top 14 teams, according to Football Outsiders DVOA rankings overall, are in the NFC, right? You look at number 15 and 16, those are the 4-win Packers and the 4-win Lions. The 7-win Commanders are 17, the 7-win Giants are 21, and the 9-win Vikings are 22, right? Of the top 5 NFC teams, you got Philly, you got Dallas, who are like legitimately good teams with good records. And then you have the 49ers are 7th in DVOA, who we already the Falcons already beat. You have the Bucks, who are 10th, who most of us hope the Falcons will be able to beat in week 18. And then you have the Seahawks, who we already beat, who are 12, right? And so basically the NFC is full of like 2 good teams, Dallas and Philly, and then a whole bunch of teams that have bad records that should be better than their records indicate, like Tampa Bay is a prime example of that. And then a whole bunch of teams that have good records but aren't really that good, like the Commanders, the Giants, and the Vikings, right? And so it does lead us to the point we led with, which is like Tampa Bay sucking and continuing losing games to some sorry teams like Carolina, like Pittsburgh, like Green Bay, like Cleveland, you know, is keeping the Falcons in playoff contention in this division race when they really shouldn't. And it's going to probably come down to that week 18 matchup where the Falcons and Bucks, that's going to decide who winds up winning the NFC South. And so we could have a situation where the Falcons could lose the Steelers game this week. But if they beat the Saints and then beat the Cardinals after the bye and then wind up winning that week 18 game against the Bucks and finally handing Tom Brady his first loss against the Falcons, you know, I think they'll probably have a good shot at winning the division with an 8-9 record. And so the way it should be, right, again, coulda, shoulda, woulda, but the way it should be is like the Bucks should be at least 2 or 3 wins better than they currently are. They should be like an 8-3 team. That, you know, 3 of those 4 games that I mentioned, the Carolina, the Steelers game, the Packers, and the Browns, they probably should have won those games, at least 3 out of those 4 games, to be 8-3 at this point. They would be an unimpressive 8-3 because it's like, why are they coming to all these games coming down to the wire? But it's like they're still like the team in the division. And if that was the case, let's say the Bucks were 8-3 at this point, you know, the division race would be basically out of the Falcons' hand grasp. Unless they ran the table for the next 5 games, which is probably not going to happen. And so that would put the Falcons at a point where the 7 seed would probably be out of reach at this point in time, because this loss to Washington would put them basically 3 games behind for that 7 seed with 5 games remaining. So it would basically, you would need Washington to basically choke from here on out. And the Falcons would potentially have to win, you know, 4 or 5 of the remaining games and potentially run the table. And so basically their playoff hopes, while not mathematically 0, it would be basically nil at this point in time. And we'd be having the conversation at least this week. It was like, well, I think it's time to start Desmond Ridder, right? You know? And so essentially, yes, I think the number one reason why the Desmond Ridder is not going to play the rest of the season is because of the Bucks sucking, and the Bucks sucking is because of Giselle, right? Like, you know, like Tom Brady going through whatever he's going through in his personal life is the reason why the Bucks, you know, have this like 27th ranked scoring offense in the league, which is unheard of for Tom Brady to be on an offense. I don't think he's ever been on an offense that was like lower than 13th in scoring offense. Again, don't quote me on that. But like, I remember looking it up, you know, a couple of years ago where it's like every year, like they're like a top 5 offense throughout his entire time in New England with a few exceptions and, you know, Tampa Bay. So it's just like, yeah, man, like, you know, the popular narrative has been like, oh, the reason why Arthur Smith isn't playing Desmond Ridder is because You know, there's something going on. He's not performing in practice or whatever. That's the excuse of people. No, it's Giselle, guys. The reason why Arthur Smith hasn't turned to Desmond Ridder at this point in season is because the Falcons are still in playoff contention. And it's not because Marcus Mariota is playing great football. It's not because Desmond Ridder is a bad practice player. It's because of Giselle and the Bucs sucking is the only reason, is the number one reason why Desmond Ridder is not starting this weekend against the Steelers. And we're not getting our Kenny Pickett versus Desmond Ridder QB do for who's the true QB1 in the 2022 NFL draft class. That's it, guys. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. You know, please argue amongst yourselves in the comments, but it's the correct opinion, guys. So I'll leave it at that. That's the argument I'm going to make. That's what I'm sticking with. Our last question that is related to Mariota comes from Justin L. Shafee at J. L. Shafee on Twitter. He asks, is there any way Mariota's contract, When Mariota's contract was written, there was an addendum on being mathematically eliminated from the playoffs or similar to that. I am one of the few who doesn't even mind him playing. It's frustrating, but he has also made plays too. So it's a give and a take, but I really, really want to see what Ridder can do. So Justin, I have never heard of any such clause in a player's contract. So that would be new to me. I doubt there's such a clause in, like, oh, you're the starting quarterback as long as the Falcons are in playoff contention. But again, the previous conversation tells me that, you know, it's the Giselle clause. If there is a clause, that should be what it should be renamed as. So we will leave that conversation there, guys. And we will talk a little bit about how much progress we have seen from this team to be a competitive football team that is in playoff contention, right? And we'll also talk about Kyle Pitts's lack of progress, and we'll talk a lot about Ade Ogundeji and his performance after a very questionable game against Washington and sort of what his role is moving forward here in Atlanta. And we'll get into that as we continue today's episode, guys. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor, LinkedIn. We know that LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier for you to find the right people that you want to talk to faster and for free. You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach the world's largest professional market and network of over 800 million people. LinkedIn Jobs is going to help you spread the word that you're hiring, and it's going to give you simple tools like screening questions to make it easy for you to focus on the candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you want to hire and interview. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs is going to help you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNFL. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNFL to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And guys, before we wrap up today's Q&A episode, I do want to let you know that if you're checking us out on Roku and Amazon Fire TV, you can check out this podcast as well as the other great local sports shows here on the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast network. And you can do it 24/7 and for free by downloading the Locked On Sports Atlanta app today on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So our next question comes from Clement. He asks, hey, Sirius Black, this comes from the Discord. Question for the mailbag. You said early September after the Saints loss that you did not expect much from this team, and that if the Falcons were good enough, scrappy team that can compete in the majority of games, you would be happy. So are you happy? Well, Clement, I am never happy, which is part of the reason why I'm in therapy. But, you know, let's talk about happiness as it applies to football team, right? Not happiness as it applies to the rest of my life, right? I would say I am content, right? You know, I do like the fact that every single week, with the exception of the Bengals game, the Falcons have been in contention and I've felt like going into every single game, with a few exceptions, that they can win every single game. Even in the weeks where I'm predicting them to lose, I do feel like, well, it's going to be a close game. It'll come down to a possession in the fourth quarter. And if the Falcons make the plays, they'll win. If they don't make the plays, then they'll wind up losing. And I like the fact that we're at that point in the season. As you guys well know, you know, I did not have high expectations for this team this season. They've exceeded those expectations. And so, you know, for me, a lot of what I was looking at going into the season, because I had such low expectations, was hashtag progress, that we could see this team play four competitive, or at least close to four competitive quarters of football against teams that were perceived to be better than them. And we have seen that again outside of that Cincinnati game. We've seen that pretty much every single week. And it goes back to the criticisms I had of Arthur Smith last season and throughout the offseason, which was I felt like it was an excuse from a lot of people where they would basically say like, oh, well, our lack of competitiveness last year against those quality teams like New England and Dallas and et cetera, Tampa Bay was, oh, we just lack talent, right? And, you know, there was this, to me, this myth that people were perpetuating that like once we get cap space and once we add talent, all of our problems are going to go away and everything's going to work out. And my thought process was like, you know, I need to see you elevate lesser talent before I buy into this myth that if we can just go out there and buy this super talented roster, all of our problems are going to go away. Like, you know, I wish it, of course it, you wish it could be that easy where you could just go out there and buy the NFL's best roster, you know, in order to make your problems go away. If only that has ever worked in the history of the NFL. And so, you know, I feel like they have accomplished that mission of elevating lesser talent. I think that's what we're seeing consistently this year. And so they have checked that box. Absolutely. And so it feels like mission accomplished in that regard. Hopefully it's not like George Bush's mission accomplished on that front. But like, to me now the mission becomes, can you develop Desmond Ridder, right? Can you develop a young quarterback? And I think, you know, I know this has been an unpopular opinion amongst Falcon fans. I do think Desmond Ridder is this team's best shot at doing that, you know, in the near future, because I do not feel like they're going to find a better option than Desmond Ridder in the upcoming draft. And I don't also think, you know, I'm not one of these, you know, I'm sorry for my condescension when I say this, but one of these crazy people that thinks, you know, Lamar Jackson's on the table, right? You know, so I feel like it's really about, can they develop Desmond Ridder? And obviously, you know, I was hoping we would see that development begin in 2022. Again, there's just still a slim possibility, you know, that maybe we'll see that after the bye week, you know, but we really need Tampa Bay. We really need Giselle to get back with Tom for that to happen. But like, you know, it doesn't seem like that's immediately on the horizon. And obviously Arthur Smith feels like, you know, that's a decision that he's basically going to punt to 2023. And, you know, I've made peace with that. I'm not like, you know, I'm not in love with that decision, but look, what am I going to do? I'm just going to sit here on the podcast and complain. Like that's all I can do. Right. So I will say, to answer your question, Clement, I am content, but happy as an Atlanta Falcon fan, that's really an oxymoron. So our next question comes from AJ Evans via email. He asked, since Kyle Pitts' season is most likely over, and he sent this in last week, can we say Pitts improved in any area? I think you can say his blocking improved, you know, much to the chagrin of fantasy owners everywhere. I don't think we can really say definitively that any other areas, particularly as a pass catcher, have improved. The ways that we wanted to see Kyle Pitts improve is in his contested catch ability and his route running. We did not see really any sort of tangible progress there, but I don't know if that's because of anything lacking in Kyle Pitts or anything lacking in this coaching staff. We just don't have the level of quarterback play that can really elevate and allow us to evaluate that. I'm sorry. So as they say, there's always next year. Our next question comes from the Discord. That's from Harry and Gary. He asks, hello, Aaron. Why is Ade on the field? He is terrible. We should see more of Arnold Ebiketie and D'Angelo Malone. Is he the worst edge in the league? No, I don't think he's the worst edge in the league. But obviously, you know, from this Washington game, that final play where he, you know, botched the punt block and ran into the kicker, you know, the conclusion from a lot of people is, oh, Ade's terrible. He's the worst. And, you know, one of the things I try to do on this podcast is elevate the conversation. And, you know, this is the only place where you're going to get, you know, actual analysis of special teams. You know, everybody else would just basically look at that play. He's terrible. There's nothing he could have done. And I think just simple coaching would have avoided that issue. And I'm sure Marquise Williams has already addressed it, but I look at that, why he ran into the punter. You know, I think some of it is owed to the fact that Tressway, the Commander's punter, is a little bit more offset than usual, right? It's not unusual for a punter to be sort of offset because you don't necessarily have to line up directly behind the long snapper. But usually you'll see a punter kind of line up one step to the left or one step to the right, depending on what foot he, and it seemed like Tressway was like two steps over. And so I think that kind of threw off Ade's aim point. That normally, if he had been one step, you know, where he was supposed to be, Ade probably wouldn't have ran into his plant leg. And he would have probably just sort of crossed his face and potentially blocked the punt with his length or whatever. You know, and I also don't think it helps that Tressway is left-footed. So basically, being that offset and also lining up, you know, on the opposite side made it so that Ade was basically running directly at his plant leg. And of course that leads to the penalty. So I think that's a coaching issue that the Falcons can address and resolve. Now, I'm sure Harry and Gary, you're more focused on Ade's deficiencies on defense, leading to, you know, bringing up Ebiketie and D'Angelo Mullen. I understand that. Right. And, you know, the main reason why the Falcons put Ade on the field and play him as much as they do is because they like his ability in run defense. And unfortunately for him, he hasn't been great in run support this year. He hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't been great. He hasn't been significantly better than guys like Ebiketie or Malone, who've also been very inconsistent in their run support, in their ability to sort of set the edge. And I remember, I think it was after the Rams game, I did a show with Scott Kennedy, and we talked a little bit about Ade playing over some of these young guys. And I was basically like, yeah, Ade's on the field because he plays the run really well. And I remember sort of Scott hit back with like, oh, well, he's not even that good of a run defender. He, you know, and like, I think the very next week was that week against the Seahawks where Ade sort of lost contain on a couple of those plays on that opening drive. And, you know, it's basically been all downhill ever since. And then if you're not adding value as a run defender, you know, you need to add value as a pass rusher, right? And unfortunately, that's something that Ade's not really doing. I did credit him with a hurry in this game. But, you know, those types of plays, those positive pass rushes have been few and far between. In week 9, I did give him a pressure, but it came via a stunt. In week 4, he had a hurry, but he was unblocked on that particular play. Now, in the first two games, I did credit him with 3 combined hurries in that game. So in my defense, Scott, if you're listening, at that time when I was on the show, he was fine then. It's been all downhill since then. You jinxed it, Scott, is what I'll say. But yeah, he just, you know, basically all his production has come, you know, sort of manufactured production, which is the stunts and the unblocked stuff, which, you know, a true pass rusher is, you know, generating pressure on his own by winning with moves and all that sort of stuff. So this kind of goes back to the conversation we had about Ade when we first drafted him. And I didn't really like Ade as an edge rusher, right? I wanted to kind of bulk him up and make him more of a situational interior pass rusher, kind of a very, very poor man's Michael Bennett. And I use Michael Bennett's name, not because I think he has that sort of talent level, but just because Michael Bennett is the most famous version of a player that sort of played on the edge on rundowns and then kicked inside on passing downs over the last decade. Justin Tuck would be another great example, but again, not comparing. And those are the two most prominent names out there. Don't think Ade's going to be. He's a very, very poor man's, right? A very impoverished, a homeless man's Michael Bennett, if you can go that far. So, you know, when it comes to Ade, I feel like he's last year he outperformed my expectations. We talked about this during last season where like where I thought his floor was, he came in a little bit above that floor, but I still had very big concerns about his ceiling this year. And a lot of that was due to, I just don't think he has the athleticism to have a high ceiling, right? And I feel like that has shown throughout the season, right? He just doesn't have the athleticism to be an effective edge player in space, right? And this gets routinely exploited in coverage this year. There was a play against Washington in the fourth quarter where they ran a screen to Logan Thomas. And fortunately for the Falcons, it was nullified by an offensive pass interference penalty on Washington. But that was a play where it was very clear that Ade could not keep up with Logan Thomas on that particular play and had no chance of covering him and defending him and even making the tackle after the catch in pursuit due to the fact that he just does not have that sort of speed, right? And so to me, I do think it would be better for him. You would see his athletic limitations show less if he was to sort of bulk up and be this 275-pound hand-in-the-dirt 5 technique. I think that's a better use of his skill set that could kick inside, you know, on third downs, and he could use his length to sort of bully guards who tend to have shorter arms and whatnot. And that's a matchup advantage that he may wind up having there. And, you know, a good example of what I foresee him being able to be was in that Seattle game where he did struggle, but there was a play in the second quarter, I think we highlighted on the podcast back then, was there was a play where he was able he lined up at the four eye technique, which is on the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle. So very similar to a five technique. And he was able to beat the block and get a stop on third and short. Right. And then he had his hand in the dirt on that particular play. And I won't say that's the last good play he's made, but it's the last memorable play that I really can think of Ade making since then. And so, like, you know, I feel like if we get back to that and more of that, you know, he could be quote unquote salvaged as a rotational player. And, you know, that's going to be to me the best path for him because unfortunately he doesn't even have his special teams value anymore. Right. You know, he's really a guy that's an eighth or ninth man in a D line outside linebacker rotation, you know, that could, you know, play as that role and be a functional sort of run defender, kind of similar to what Derek Shelby was, you know, during his, you know, 2017, those years. And then also play on special teams in addition to that. And we talked about his value on special teams because he was kind of the reason why the Falcons wind up cutting Jacob Tuohy Marinier last year, right? Because Ade wound up taking JTM's spot on special teams and that kind of made JTM expendable. But now this year, Nick Kwiatkowski has taken Ade's spot on special teams on those coverage punt coverage units. And that's now making Ade more expendable, especially when he's not giving you the value as a pass rusher and he's not giving that plus value as a run defender. And so again, to me, if he was to bulk up, he could be that eighth, ninth guy in a rotation. But the problem with the Falcons currently is he's right now, based off of his snaps, is like the fifth or sixth guy in the rotation, you know, depending on where you stack him and Abdullah Anderson at this current point. And this kind of also applies to Abdullah Anderson, where both of those guys should probably be at the bottom of that rotation, that eighth or ninth guy in the rotation. And, you know, unfortunately, the Falcons just don't really have the talent to, you know, allow those guys to be at the bottom of the rotation rather than sort of in the middle of their defensive rotation. So it's basically telling us that at the very least, we need to go out there and find three new D linemen slash edge rushers this offseason so that we can, you know, fix that and correct that issue. And so, you know, where D'Angelo Malone currently stacks on the Falcons D line rotation, where Jalen Dalton currently stacks on the D line rotation, where these guys are basically playing like 15 snaps a game, that's where the sort of eighth, ninth man guy, you know, rolls in. That's kind of where Ade and Abdullah need to be, you know, in the future. And we'll see if they get there. And obviously that depends on the Falcons adding more talent and, you know, developing some of these players like Malone, like maybe Jalen Dalton, potentially those guys leapfrogging him in future years. And that's part of the reason why, like, I don't think it's fair to be that critical of the Falcons defense, you know, going back to those conversations we've had many times on the podcast about lowered expectations, where it's like, look, you know, if Ade and Abdullah Anderson to a lesser extent, you know, we're on a quote unquote playoff, a real playoff defense, a playoff caliber defense, right? Like they would probably not even be on the roster, right? You know, they would probably be on the practice squad of most playoff caliber defenses. Instead, you know, here in Atlanta, because of their deficiency in talent, you know, they're playing like 30 plus snaps a game. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we're able to sort of tread water, if you can call what we're doing on defense treading water, you know, with this level, goes back to the conversation we had earlier about, you know, this coaching staff elevating the talent and getting the most out of this year's roster. And hopefully, you know, the fact that they are able to do that with quote unquote practice squad level talent, back in roster level talent, and, you know, getting a functional unit together, you know, I think tells us that, okay, now I can trust you that once we start adding real talent, you know, first, second, third round picks, you know, premium free agents. Now we can actually see, you know, real development and real progress, you know, where next year we can be having the conversation potentially where it's like, oh, you know, it's week 12 and we're actually a playoff team. And it's not just, you know, because Giselle divorced Tom Brady. So that's it, guys. That's the end of the conversation. You know, Lockdown Falcons is the only place where we're going to get special teams breakdown and talking about that and breaking that stuff down. So, of course, if you want to have your questions answered on future Q&As, of course, you can hit me up on the Discord at Lockdown Falcons. You can send an email to lockdownfalcons@mail.com. You can hit me up on Twitter or Facebook at Lockdown Falcons. And, of course, you can leave a comment here on the Lockdown Falcons YouTube channel. And, of course, I'll link to the several plays that I discussed in the comments below and on Twitter. So guys, really appreciate you listening. Tomorrow, of course, is Crossover Wednesday, where we'll be joined by Locked On Steelers, Chris Carter, to break down this week 13 matchup between Kenny Pickett and, unfortunately for some of us, not all of us, Marcus Mariota. So that will do it for us, guys. Really appreciate it. Till then.